Morning everyone, and welcome to episode 53 of the Fendrian podcast. Thank you for listening, thank you, it's good to have you along. One of the busiest times of the cycling season. It's absolutely manic at the moment, they're coming thick and fast, aren't they? After last week's show, we talked about the excitement of Paris-Nice and did a little Milan-San Remo preview. So we'll see how that race played out. Quite excitingly, I think excitingly is a word. We've also got little bits to cover on the upcoming races. We've got some Flemish classics, we've got the Tour of Catalunya. I think we talked about the fact that we'd ridden some of the roads of that last year. So also, after we get away from that, an unmentionable subject in the form of depression in cycling. Josh Edmondson, who was a massive prospect when he was on the GB Academy, he was up there in the Tour of Britain, signed for Team Sky, massive things expected, drifted away, and he's kind of admitted to a whole host of kind of semi-misdemeanours in the press.
We'll maybe get there.
This last week. So, we'll cover Milan-San Remo first. And what a race it was, eh? Excitement pretty much guaranteed with that one, up until the last sort of 30, 40Ks usually, when it gets a little bit less exciting and contrives to be a sprint finish. But on the Poggio, the final climb, it was clear that someone needed to do something to get the sprinters out. Tom Dumoulin was setting a pretty rapid pace and to try and set up Michael Matthews of Sunweb Giant. And he was doing a pretty good job. And then all of a sudden, around one of the hairpins, it all came to a crashing finale for him. And he pulled over to one side. It kind of all looked like it was going to bunch together a little bit after that. And maybe, having listened to some interviews with Sam Bennett recently, maybe the plan was for Peter Sagan to try and make it difficult to get Sam Bennett over the top, because he would have been the designated Bora sprinter. As it happened, Sagan's attack was that good. Only Stara Bianchi winner Michael Kwiatkowski and Julian Alaphilippe, a puncheur from Quickstep, could stay with him. They got to the top, and it was race done at that point. You couldn't see them coming back or getting on. It was 12-15 seconds, and it got bigger and bigger, the gap, as the descent got on almost. And even with a little bit of finessing in the finishing straight, you always knew that they were going to stay away. It was a strange sprint, really, because a lot's been made of the fact that Sagan shipped his chain, but I think probably it would have been a victory for Kwiatkowski anyway. And he's a man in a massive amount of rich vein of form at the moment. And from that perspective, he was always going to be the main man. And he just about edged it. Behind Alaphilippe, probably bemoaning the fact that he hadn't got a sprint. Probably we should have considered him, really, because he was in stellar form in Paris-Nice. It was only the top level 1800 metre mountain pass that stopped him from really, winning the race. So, aside from that, the bunch gallop, there was the usual Arnaud Demars and people. He put up a reasonable defence, actually, of his title, that kind of zoomed in, and it kind of passed, really, without sort of like the major, a major incident, kind of like last year with the car, toes and all this kind of stuff. But actually, it played out pretty much, one of two or three scenarios. And Sagan's clearly on another level to everyone else at the moment. It bodes well for the Tour of Flanders. It'll be interesting to see how he goes this weekend in Gent-Wevelgem. Seems hard to feel that it was a year since we were at the start line for that one. He's got that, he's got the first proper decent look at the Quiramont and one or two of the other big climbs coming up, and it'll be interesting. I think he'll hide away if he rides the Dwars van Vlaanderen and the other kind of races that are coming on midweek. Good luck to him, because I think he could be a good watch this spring again. Elsewhere, we've got the Tour of Catalunya that's going on. Good, interesting sort of parkour, really. They started with a relatively lumpy stage that was still a sort of sprinter's finish. Somehow Nasser Pawani managed to lose to David Chimalai of FDJ, who, with the grossest of wheels in the world, you know, is not necessarily, you know, top level sprinter, that is for sure. He's a top level bike rider, of course. So that was intriguing. And then we had Movistar in the team time trial yesterday, and obviously now, while it's fresh in the mind, the controversy of whether or not their tactic of having a rider sitting at the back pushing people into the line to make sure they didn't get dropped is ethically right or illegal, or, you know, something akin to what the Italian rugby team would try. So it'll be interesting to see how that story plays out in the coming weeks. The main crux of the podcast, though, this week comes from the revelations of Josh Edmondson, the former Team Sky lad rider, and his complex relationship with Dr. Steve Peters, you know, the famous chimp management guy, just with regards to how his kind of Sky career panned out and how it kind of disintegrated for him, based on the fact that he needed a lot of medication, and then he kind of almost came into the fact that he was depressed. And Sky have almost, or Peter certainly has almost said, you know, we'd look at that kind of instance and we would say, you know, we maybe wouldn't alert the anti-doping authorities to stuff that he's doing if, you know, he's clearly, you know, in a bad fragile state of mind. And it got me thinking that there's a lot of historic data and relevance to cyclists and depression. The first kind of case I sort of read into many years ago was that of Robert Miller, 1984 Tour King of the Mountains, close to a Vuelta win, Scottish guy who was, you know, pretty decent climber. Would have won at Alpe d'Huez if he hadn't had a, you know, some problems on a last corner going wrong off course. Once tour stage wins, you know, great rider for Zed, you know, brilliant stuff. But he had a lot of, towards the end of his career, and if you've read his biography, you'll know that, had a lot of mental issues. And it almost felt, reading that and reading some other examples from some Dutch riders over the years, that it's pretty much a sport that attracts the depressed, reclusive, soul-searching solitude. I don't know how true that is. But there certainly feels like there's something in it, you know, that people that get home from a, you know, a hard day's work and they just want to get on their bike and they just want to pedal it out, which is, you know, great. That's what people do, I suppose. People go for a run or they go and play football or whatever. The pain element of cycling and the endurance element and how grueling it is seems to almost take people onto another level where, you know, there's that core of riders who do it because, you know, they like to feel like they're punishing themselves. They like the pain because they feel like it's some form of cleansing. And then you've kind of got the other element where, you know, Josh Edmondson obviously was, you know, you feel for the guy who was in a situation or trapped in a situation or in a position where he didn't really, I don't think, know what to do. It almost got too big too soon for him, if that makes any sort of sense. And, you know, you look at how things have worked for him. It's important that he get, you know, he's in a good place mentally and health-wise and stuff now. But, you know, he was throwing some stuff into his body during that period with Sky to try and maybe even like feel like he's trying to conform, or I genuinely don't know. It's sad, without speaking to the guy, of course. So, yes, interesting stuff. And another layer of misery for Team Sky in a story that's showing no signs of becoming any less painful for Dave Brailsford and them. This is probably, you know, the last thing they need is an ex-rider weighing in and saying that, you know, he was taking painkillers and goodness knows what. So, interesting. And you know, I'd be interested in some views, Facebook or tweet us, because, you know, your feedback's always welcome. And I do think there is some sort of correlation. I think maybe a lot of other sports are doing, you know, mental health awareness checks and all of those kind of things. Maybe cycling should follow suit. We'll see. Anyway, wrapped up for this week. Thank you very much for listening again. Please do keep sharing us and putting us out there. We'll be back next week with a bit more on the Flemish Classics. And we're getting close to the big ones, aren't we? Roubaix and Flanders. So, yeah, let's count them down nicely. Speak to you next week. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.